The man who would become one of soul music's most seductive voices was born Albert Leorns Green on April 13, 1946, in Forest City, Arkansas, and he almost never found that voice at all. Before the silk, there was pure imitation. Young Al Green grew up in a large African-American family, steeped in gospel music, singing with his siblings in the Green Brothers gospel group before he could even think about secular stages. That gospel foundation was real. But when he started chasing pop success, he chased the wrong model. He wanted to be a shouter, raw, explosive, commanding, like the high-energy performers who dominated the circuit. The problem was simple. That wasn't his gift, and it took someone else to show him what was. Now, think of it this way. A sculptor who keeps trying to carve marble with a paintbrush. That's where Green was before producer Willie Mitchell entered the picture. Mitchell was Green's principal collaborator during his breakthrough period at High Records in Memphis, and their creative friction became the engine of something revolutionary. Mitchell heard something in Green's voice that Green himself was ignoring, a quality of restraint, of intimacy, of a man speaking directly into your ear rather than shouting across a room. The key idea here is that Mitchell didn't just produce records, he redirected a career. He pushed Green away from the bombastic and toward the vulnerable. That shift was not comfortable. Green resisted. He had spent years studying the shouters, absorbing their power, building his identity around that energy. Letting it go felt like surrender. Royal Studios in Memphis was not a glamorous facility by any standard measure, but the physical environment mattered enormously. The room had a particular acoustic character, warm, close, almost confessional, and Mitchell used it deliberately. He built arrangements around restrained horns, deep grooves, and gospel organ, stripping away the sonic clutter that let a singer hide behind volume. That meant Green had nowhere to hide. He had to deliver emotion through nuance, through breath, through the precise placement of a falsetto note. For example, the way Green would let a phrase dissolve into a near whisper and then pull it back, that wasn't accidental. It was a technique forged under Mitchell's direction in that specific room. The result was a Memphis soul sound, unlike anything being made elsewhere. It bridged the rawness of deep soul with the smoother textures associated with Philadelphia soul, and it did so by centering the human voice as an instrument of intimacy rather than spectacle. The commercial proof arrived fast. Tired of Being Alone broke through in 1971. Then came Let's Stay Together in 1972, reaching number one on both the pop and rhythm and blues charts. Eddie, that's not a small achievement, that's a crossover moment that defined an era. Love and Happiness followed, and Take Me to the River demonstrated something even more significant, Green's ability to fuse secular soul performance with gospel-rooted spiritual yearning. His music joined romantic and sensual themes with something that felt genuinely sacred. The albums I'm Still in Love with You and Call Me cemented his status as one of the most important soul artists of the early 1970s. Remember, this was all built on a single foundational decision to stop imitating and start inhabiting his own sound. The takeaway from Green's origin story is this, Eddie. The signature sound was not discovered by accident, and it was not handed to him. It was the product of creative tension, a producer who refused to let him coast on imitation, and a studio environment that demanded honesty. Al Green's intimate falsetto-laced delivery, the thing that makes Let's Stay Together feel like it was recorded just for you, came from a deliberate, sometimes uncomfortable rejection of what soul music was supposed to sound like. He dropped the final E from his surname and built something entirely his own. That combination of silk and grit, of gospel roots and secular longing, of restraint and raw feeling, is what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame recognized when they inducted him in 1995. It's what earned him a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2002. And it all started with a voice that had to be redirected before it could become irreplaceable.